You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
欢迎大家收听《加油脑袋瓜》每周二的机智问答音讯广播节目，我是本周主持人 Karen， 然后在我右手边是，
我是 Colin，
我是 Dana，
我是 Chris。
Just kidding.
April Fool's.
It's not in Chinese.
The whole show isn't in Chinese.
That would have been really difficult. Even for me. I couldn't even find the Chinese word or the Mandarin Chinese word for podcast.
Oh.
They just call it podcast.
Just a lone word.
Mm. Yep. Oh, okay. So I was like, I don't even know how you translate that. Anyways, but here's the real intro. Here we go. Welcome, spiffy, speculative, springy, sprightly speedsters. You are listening to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 104. And of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your doggone, dog-trotting, dog-tired, doggy dogs.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
Well, sure, Chris.
Yeah. Now you know something.
Yeah. I know something.
Your original intro, what did you say?
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Good Job Brain, which is 加油, 脑袋瓜. Tuesday's trivia quiz show audio program.
Okay.
Because there's no podcast.
not quite as snappy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. I am your host, and then to my right is Colin and blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
All right, I want to share a headline with you guys, and a lot of you guys probably saw this. It was a big headline. It was on CNN, I believe. 14-year-old figure out a way to save government a lot of money.
Mm.
Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
I did.
Pittsburgh teenager, 14-year-old Suvir Merchandani. He's trying to think of ways to cut waste and save money at his middle school, and it kind of became a science fair project. And he realized that if simply the government changed their font, they would save a lot of money because ink is expensive. He said ink is 2 times more expensive than French perfume by volume, right? Chanel No. 5, the perfume, costs $38 per ounce, whereas an HP printer ink, you know, of the same amount can cost up to $75.
Right, but I wouldn't want to dab it underneath my earlobes.
No. Ew. So he proposed that, if the government changed a font that uses less ink, then that would save them money. Correct? That sounds good.
What a remarkable idea. I definitely saw that story repeated all over the place. It was on Facebook. People were emailing it. I think it made all the major news broadcasts. And not to be a downer, but I'm going to be a downer.
All right. Here we go. This is a new segment called Colin's Takedown.
Yeah, that's right.
So I was browsing one of
gears.
I was browsing one of my typography and font websites. And somebody on there, you know, was making the point like, you know, I'm really happy people are thinking about typography and fonts, but this is just one of those examples of a story where it's so oversimplified that it was kind of like, actually, there were a lot of sort of oversimplified or erroneous parts of this story. And so like, The one thing that the font site pointed out is, yeah, if you had switched to Garamond, in fact, was the font that the kid had suggested, it does use less ink because the letters are smaller. I mean, you could make the same change by just making all of your type smaller. You know, it's not the change to a new font. It's that font actually has smaller letters at the same point size.
So like if you Arial or Comic Sans at 12 point and you compare it to Garamond at 12 point, Garamond looks like a smaller
that's
font.
That's right.
It looks like you scaled it down.
That's right. That's right. So that's part of it. And then they got into some more technical areas, and I'll just summarize very quickly. But
break it down for the lay people,
strike
Colin.
One. Yeah.
Well, so they pointed out that a lot of the government printing, the major printing offices, they don't use HP inkjets in the office. They do offset printing on machines that use radically different kinds of inks than the kind of ink that you would use, or even laser toner or ink. Inkjet ink.
So he's calculating HP ink volumes if you go to Staples and buy HP ink, but that's not what they're actually...
Right. And then finally, the last point that
the nail in the spike in the coffin of...
The knife twisting. Yeah.
Was that most government offices, like many large private companies, they have printing contracts with printer companies. They're not paying for the ink. They're not paying for the toner. If anything, they're paying on the number of pages printed.
Oh.
So if you print 1,000 pages, that's your cost. It doesn't matter what's on those pages.
It's going to be full black with ink.
Right. Generally. generally the one toner word. Or the ink is part of the service contract. So, you know, it is sort of one of those like feel good stories because it involves kids, it involves government waste potentially, but it was a little oversimplified.
He was looking at his school though, and I wonder if they use HP.
Well, so a lot of the experts say that this is a, he did come up with a remarkable idea, probably not for the scale of the government, but great for households.
Sure.
You know, if you're at home and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll change my default Arial or Calibri to Garamond.
Your weekly household scheduling printout.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, what do I even print
out? Nobody prints anything anymore.
Boarding pass.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. There you go.
You could just show it on your phone, though, now.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it is a feel-good story. You want it to be right, and then the next thing you know, you're being a jerk to a 14-year-old on a podcast. I think even among nerds, font nerds are looked at in their own little area,
It's so specific, Colin.
It is very specific.
And we have very exciting news. We actually get a lot of mail asking us how they can help support us, you know, because we had Kickstarter before and that's over. So a lot of people are like, oh, I wish I knew about this so I would have Kickstarted and added some money. And so now we've debuted something called Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon is a service where you can donate money as low as $1 a month for Good Job Brain.
Yeah, especially after, you know, our fan meetup in Vegas, which was fantastic. Like, we just sort of have this wish list of stuff that we want to do now. Like, we want to do more meetups and maybe live events or pub trivia contests and things like
scavenger
that.
Scavenger hunts.
Right.
Video like, series.
Video stuff.
Right. And depending on, you know, if we can get some money in our budget, we will definitely, you know, try to do some of that stuff. So that's kind of what we're going for here.
And you can check that out at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/ Good Job Brain, and check it out. Yeah, $1 a month, and we might come to your city.
Oh.
That sounds like a threat.
It does. Yeah.
Nice little city you got there. It's a shame if Good Job Brain was to come to it. Yeah.
All right, time for our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. I have a random trivia pursuit card here. You guys have your barnyard buzzers. All right, here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. The Pope is guarded by soldiers from what country? Chris.
Switzerland.
Whoa!
Yeah, the Swiss Guard.
The Swiss Guard.
Read some Angels and Demons.
Brush up on your Dan Brown.
Dan Brown. Switzerland, the Swiss Guard, has served the Pope since 1506. All right, Pink Wedge for pop culture. Well, it's kind of a spoiler. All right.
Do it.
As long as it's not for Game of Thrones season 4, I'm fine with that.
All right. In the 1973 sci-fi movie of the same name, what are Soylent Green wafers made of? Everybody.
People!
Yeah. Soylent Green is people.
Charlton Heston's character discovers that overpopulation has led to corporate-sponsored cannibalism.
Spoiler alert for a 40-year-old movie.
Yeah.
41.
41.
Wow. All right. Yellow Wedge, who was the first elected leader of post-Soviet Russia? Colin.
Was that Yeltsin?
What's his first name?
Oh,
Boris.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Purple Wedge. According to the nursery rhyme, how many blackbirds were baked in a pie? Chris.
24.
Yeah, 4 and 20 blackbirds.
Yeah,
I'm switching it up on you. Because it's 24.
It technically says 4.
4 and 20.
Green Wedge for science. What is the common term for the force that pulls water away from the lettuce in your salad spinner?
Oh, darn it.
Dana?
I didn't even buzz in. Oh. But I do know what it is. It's centripetal force?
Incorrect.
No.
Colin.
Centrifugal force.
Oh, I always thought it was centrifugal.
Centrifugal, but yeah.
Okay, last question, Orange Wedge. The clarified butter used in Indian cuisine is called what? Dana.
Ghee.
Ghee. Yes.
Ghee.
It's a good Scrabble word.
How do you spell ghee?
G-H-E-E.
G-H-E-E. All right, good job, brains. And of course, we have our Lobetrotter segment. Lobetrotters are our fan club members who bought a fan club pack last year. And this one is from Leland Red from Salt Lake City. And he says, Dear GJB, my wife and I went to Iceland, and now I am obsessed with all things Iceland. Did you know that the first printed reference to a geyser was the Icelandic geyser named geyser.
No.
Oh, really?
Really?
That's the etymology of geyser is Icelandic for geisa or geisa.
That's a really good one.
Meaning to gush. So it's a gusher.
I like that.
And thank you, Leland, for this fun fact. So this week, in honor of April Fools, we're going to talk about pranks, jokes, hoaxes.
Fooled ya.
Fooled ya. When there's love,
so when I was a kid, I was really into like novelties and magic tricks.
I love novelties.
Oh god,
I love going to Spencer's Gifts.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Right.
The little practical jokes. Yeah, I don't know why I thought I was such a joker. Like, but I would buy stuff out of ads that I would see in the back of like comic books or magazines. Yeah.
Wait, really?
I would.
I had the
I really
gum
would.
With the spring on it.
It
was really my dad's. It was really my dad's joke. The gum that like slaps your face.
Classic.
Gum
classic.
That turns your mouth black.
I bought a lot of these things from ads I would see for the Johnson Smith catalog, which they're still around. You may know that name. They're kind of the name in novelties and party tricks and just dumb little pranks, especially going back a ways. I had what I consider kind of the big three of the classic novelty pranks, which are, you guys could probably guess them if I gave you enough time.
Whoopee cushion.
Yep.
Joy buzzer.
Yep.
Squirting flour.
Exploding cigar.
Dribble glass.
Oh, you guys are all... It's
why an ice cube?
Can of snakes.
Third testicle.
Can of snakes. Peanut brittle.
Yes. It was often a can of, quote, fancy salted nuts. The one I had, though, was peanut brittle. Yeah. I don't know why that became...
Well, because it's more delicious.
Yeah. It's actual candy.
You guys probably know the Whoopee Cushion and the Joy Buzzer. If you've never seen the can of snakes, it's a real can, but you open up the lid and there's a fake spring snake that pops out and supposed to scare whoever's opening the can. I should have known, like, as a kid that I wasn't going to fool a lot of people when, like, these things would come in the mail and my dad's like, oh, I had that one as a kid.
Right. It's, man. I mean, as a child, it must have been so transparent. Like, whenever a child is like, hey, do you want some peanut brittle? Like, out of nowhere, like a child who's never gone to an adult ever and said, oh, do you want some of this?
And he's, like, laughing and turning red while he offers it.
Right.
Is this a can of poop?
Yeah. What 8-year-old has a can of peanut brittle, you know? And like,
they're just going around and they really want you to eat it. They don't want to show it to you.
Totally. No, you should have some.
Yeah, you should have some.
And like, again, like, what 8-year-old kid is like just constantly wants to shake hands, you know? Like friends of my parents would come over and like, oh, can I shake your hand? It's like, what? Why?
What a nice ring you're wearing there.
Hey, do you want to sit on the couch? Oh, no, I think you should sit on that cushion. That's like 4 inches taller than the rest of the cushions. Oh, for no reason. Just sit on that cushion.
Yeah. Nothing happens either. You sit on it. You have to sit really hard on the Whoopee cushion to make it work. Anyway.
So I want to share with you guys the rich history behind these three particular items.
Okay.
And how they can be traced back to the legacies of two men, largely. S.S. Adams and Alfred Johnson Smith of the aforementioned Johnson Smith catalog.
Oh, I always saw S.S. Adams on all of the
Interesting. So I was more of a Johnson Smith kid. You were more of an S.S. Adams kid.
Yep.
Oh, so they're right.
They were rivals.
Companies.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. Two separate companies. Okay. And they forged just the American industry of cheap, crappy, practical gags. And they are both examples of the American dream. Both immigrants came to the land of opportunity with dreams of making their fortunes selling fart noisemakers and bad pranks. So let's begin with Soren Sorensen Adams, S.S. Adams.
I bet he's Danish.
He was from Denmark. Yes, indeed. His family came here in the late 1800s, and as a young man in the early 1900s, he was a salesman for a dye company, and he noticed that one of the products they sold had a tendency to make people sneeze.
Clothes dye or dice?
Mm-hmm, dyes. Okay. Oh. Like D-Y-E. Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like any good practical joker, he immediately saw the opportunity here of selling something that makes people sneeze.
Yeah. Sounds kind of dangerous.
Yeah. Well, you know, this was the 1900s.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's carcinogenic, I'm sure. Yeah. Right.
There was a lot of stuff that was going to kill you in the 1900s before.
He founded the Kachu Sneezing Powder Company.
single serving.
The whole company?
Just dedicated to selling Kachu sneezing powder. Oh, I mean, man. And it was a fad. It swept the nation.
Good marketing.
He made enough money and was successful enough at it that he realized I can make my living selling novelties and gags and little things like sneezing powder.
Oh, and expanding.
So he renamed the Kachu sneezing powder company to SS Adams, and the rest was history. And bless him, SS Adams dedicated his life to novelties and pranks. He invented hundreds of these little devices that
so he invented them.
He invented many of them. Okay. In 1915, SS Adams devised the Snake Nut Can. He invented it himself, came up with the idea. To this day, it's one of their best sellers. The story goes, who knows how true this is. The story goes that his wife had been complaining at home about a particular jar of jam that was really tough to open. She's like, I can't get this jar open. So he's like, oh, I know what I'm going to do. So he himself made a fake snake, which is basically just a coil spring wrapped in fabric, stuffed it in the jam jar, and then just like kind of waited for her to open it so he could laugh at her.
What?
Yeah, I'm sure he was an absolute joy to have around.
I bet
he
slept on the couch that night. Oh my God.
In 1928, Adams invented the design for what we now know as the Joy Buzzer. He came up with it himself. It was sort of an improvement on earlier ideas, but the classic design of the little round disc with the button in the middle, he came up with it. He took it to a machinist, had him make it. It was patented in 1932. Huge, huge, huge hit.
And it wasn't, I mean, in the packaging, they always have little lightning bolts, and it's like, you think it's electric.
Right, right.
It's not.
Right. You're right. And
there's
in fact,
no way. But when you're not expecting it and you feel vibration and hear the sound, you get, and you pull your hand away.
Yep.
You don't know what it is.
Chris has it absolutely right. It was supposed to like simulate a sense of shock. But you're right. Like you'll see it in cartoons or comics. They'll depict it as if it's electrified, but it's not really electrified. He came up with the original fly in the ice cube that we were talking about. He came up with dribble glasses.
What are dribble glasses?
They have kind of a hole at the part where you drink. So you're drinking and then it's just spilling out of the cup, like below that.
Yeah, I'm sure he got invited to a lot of parties in his day.
Probably did.
Like, this guy really had an inherent gift.
He did.
He really was.
He had his finger on the pulse of what pranksters wanted. Mm-hmm. On and on and on. Just dozens and dozens and dozens of hits, many of which he invented himself. In fact, one of his only misses seems to have been turning down a proposal from the JEM Rubber Company of Canada. In the late 1920s, some employees there, they were playing around with scrap sheets of rubber and kind of sealing them together. And they noticed, hey, you can fill this up with air and it makes a farting sound. So this
He's
was
like, that's crass.
Yeah.
No.
That's what happened. That's what happened.
They said it was crass.
They took their idea for the inflatable farting sound cushion. They took it to Adams and said, hey, we want you to sell this. This seems right up your alley. And he wouldn't sell it. He said he thought it was vulgar and he didn't think there was going to be a market
Wow.
But that guy invented something, when you open it, it hits you in the face.
Yeah, but that's
with
not
a
vulgar.
Metal,
but
right.
that's not
with
vulgar.
A metal violent.
Yeah, it might poke your eye out, but it's not vulgar.
Right.
So the JEM Rubber Company, they took their idea to the other major name in novelties and pranks, the Johnson Smith Company.
They're not afraid of plastic poop.
They were not
there.
Afraid to go. No. In fact, that's true. Among their biggest sellers were fake vomit.
The lower
And I'll tell you, fake vomit. Fake vomit is the long game. Kids, the fake vomit is not about leaving on the floor and somebody sees the fake, because they're going to be able to tell it's fake vomit. It's about 6 months later when there's real vomit on the floor. And then your mom is like, oh, it's that fake vomit again. And she just jams her hand right inside it to get it off the
floor. It's like the joke that pays off twice, basically.
Yep.
So yeah, Alfred Johnson Smith, he was Australian. And the roots of the company went back to Australia, but it really took off after he moved to the U.S. and started his business in the early 1900s. And he was maybe a little more lowbrow, I guess. He sold a lot of rubber chickens. And as I said, like fake vomit, fake poo over the years. Same sort of type of things. And when the JEM Rubber Company came to him and said, sir, we want you to sell our fart noisemaker, he said, yes, I will sell your fart noisemaker.
Yeah, sure.
This is what I've been looking for years.
It's brilliant.
A bolt from on high.
Yeah.
And they called it the Whoopee Cushion, went on to become an enormous hit, helped Johnson Smith become a household name.
Yeah. And that iconic picture that's on every whoopee cushion of the woman sitting on the whoopee cushion. It's never changed.
Yeah. I think it probably dates to 1930.
Little speech bubbles that say poo, poo.
Yeah.
Coming out of.
Yep. You're right. And you buy it today, it's essentially the same device.
Yep. Why change it?
Why change it? In recent years, they've started putting foam inside so that it refills itself a little bit more easily.
It refills itself.
Yeah, that's true. Like, you're right.
It's the self-refilling whoopee cushion because the foam pushes up and expands and it sucks air back in.
So you don't have to blow and inflate
it. You don't have to put your mouth where somebody's butt once.
Right, or your brother's or sister's mouth 10 times before
that. It seems like a fair price, though, for the
job. Oh, yeah, I'll pay the upcharge for that. Yeah.
You got to keep moving the technology forward. It's state-of-the-art.
Do. Yeah.
So now, of course, after seeing the wild success of the Johnson Smith whoopee cushion, S.S. Adams realized, okay, you know what? This thing is going to sell. We need our own version. So they introduced the raspberry cushion. It functions exactly the same way that a whoopee cushion functions.
But it just never caught on.
Certainly the name didn't catch on. Whoopee cushion was first to market and they owned it.
Tell me there was a lawsuit.
I don't think there was a lawsuit. Oh. This is kind of just back in the early days of, you're going to rip me off. I'm going to rip you off. We'll see who does better.
Okay.
Today, both S.S. Adams and Johnson Smith are still around.
Wow.
They sell a lot of stuff online. Still going strong. You can still buy the Snake Nut can, still buy the Joy Buzzer. And I love that they've been around for decades and decades and decades.
So you said the S.S. Adams company also released a whoopee cushion. What was it called?
The Raspberry Cushion.
Do you guys know why a raspberry cushion is called a raspberry cushion?
I mean, I know that like the... That's sound is called a raspberry.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
But I don't know where that allusion is to.
Correct. So when, you know, you do something and you make a farting noise or you're like, nee, 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 and you put your tongue between your lips and you exhale, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spit on it. Sure.
Yeah.
It's called
expensive equipment.
A raspberry. Why is that action called a raspberry? All right, here's a theory I found.
Oh, is there no definitive?
You know, they have recorded first use. In 1890.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the popular theory is that this was part of Cockney rhyming slang.
Okay.
So Cockney rhyming slang, a little bit hard to, I don't know how to really explain it that well. Cockney being a part of English, they would say the word they intended to, but they would make a rhyme.
Right.
So for example, you want to say, I'm going up the stairs. And they would make up, well, stairs sounds like pears, mm-hmm. and a popular phrase would be apple and pears.
Right, right.
So then you would just say apple.
Right.
So it's like three steps removed.
Right.
Another example would be a lot of people refer to their wives as trouble, not because they are trouble, because it rhymes with trouble and strife, which rhymes with wife. Anybody watched Ocean's 11, we're in Barney.
Barney Rubble.
Barney Rubble, trouble. So that's kind of what Cockney rhyming. It's like two steps removed.
Or it can be. Sometimes slang. It's just the,
Yep. So raspberry, why is raspberry related to the noise?
Okay, all right.
Raspberries
and what? You think you got it?
Raspberry tart.
Yes!
Oh.
Raspberry tart rhymes with fart. So when you say, I farted, or, you know, I let out a fart, I let out a raspberry.
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Huh. The theory of why we call raspberry.
That's a cool coded language.
It is.
Yeah,
we should do a future section on Cockney rhyming.
Yeah.
Also diner lingo.
Yeah. Purple cow.
I don't know what that is.
Purple cow is a grape soda with ice cream.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Sure.
I bet it is, but I literally never heard it.
It's like,
she's like, you know, grape soda with ice cream. That classic thing you always get at a restaurant. Or like a lemma pig, which is, you know, pork and Sprite.
Sprite with bacon.
Sprite with bacon. Give me a lemon pig, girl. One Sprite with bacon.
All right, back to raspberry. So I have some facts about fart humor.
Okay.
Speaking of whoopee cushions and raspberry tarts. I don't know if you came across this, but there is a belief that even back in the Roman days, they actually had some sort of prototype
for
whoopee cushions. Yeah. We don't know what it was, but even back then it was funny.
It was just a servant that sat underneath your chair.
It made a sound.
Somebody sat down.
Like, ew.
It was just, It's a hard job.
Yeah, I imagine it was maybe like an animal bladder or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, I
sure,
did think about that.
A servant.
Yep.
Or someone who just sat next to you and made a farting noise.
Yeah. Hey, you know, the ancient Romans, they knew good humor with this.
Yeah, fart humor. So, in honor of farts, mm-hmm. I'm sure when you guys were kids, you had a lot of comebacks when someone farted.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, here I have a quiz. okay. American culture, I'm sure other cultures too, there's kind of a joke format where if someone's farted and you're like, who farted? And someone will be like, he who smelt it dealt it.
Right.
And it's that kind of a format where he who blank and then rhymes with blank.
Right. Okay. Yes.
He who denied it supplied.
Yeah, that was the follow-up.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a whole list of here.
Oh,
you guys don't need to buzz in. Just complete the sentence.
All right. Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay.
And I'm sorry that I'm saying he who. Yeah. We're just going to go with he who.
Right.
That doesn't mean
all girls can fart too.
Girls
basically
can fart
is what we're trying to
they
say.
They can, that? But they don't.
Yeah.
It smells like roses.
We call them powder puffs.
All right. Here we go. He who declared it.
Oh.
He aired it?
Aired it, yeah.
Aired it, not bad. There's another one too.
He who declared it. Blared it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Blared it and blared it. Acceptable answers.
Blared it, blared it.
Okay. He who observed it.
Deserved
it? Yeah.
He who observed it.
Served it?
Served it.
Okay. It's the act of.
Act of emitting.
Right, yeah.
He who detected it.
Ejected it.
Yes.
Nice. Very
good. He who's poking fun.
Is the smoking gun.
Yes!
Nice!
He who refuted it.
Pooted it.
Tooted it.
Distributed it.
Distributed it.
Pooted it.
I'll say tooted.
Tooted it.
Tooted it.
I'm gonna go
with it. But I think extruded it.
Extruded it. He refuted it, extruded it.
Not bad.
Yeah. That's like diarrhea.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
That's something coming
out. Or just regular.
Yeah. He who deduced it.
Produced it. It's produced.
Yes. I had no idea there was such a rich set of sayings.
It's quite rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Words rhyme, man.
Yeah.
And fart humor. All right. He who spoke it.
Broke it?
Yep.
Broke it. As in, yes.
He who explained it.
Sustained it.
Not bad. Yes, that works.
Claimed it?
He who what?
Explained.
He who aimed. Explained it.
Aimed it.
Ordained it.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's quite a big word.
That's what you say. Yeah. That's what you say when the Pope farts.
Yeah.
When the Swiss guard are like, hey, man, you smell that?
I was like, he who ordained it.
He who thunk it.
Stunk it.
Stunk it. Right. He who resented it.
Presented it.
This goes on. Two more. He who accused it.
Diffused it.
Oh, okay.
And my favorite one.
Oh.
All right.
He who articulated it.
Particulated it.
It has a little science angle.
Oh, goodness.
That one I remember from Futurama.
He who articulated it, particularly.
It was young little Huber. He who articulated it, particulated it.
That's a very Futurama joke.
So cute.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you, everybody. There you go. And let's take a quick ad break. A word from our sponsor.
Imagine bold, naturally aged Tillamook cheddar slices melting over a burger. Eating handfuls of thick-cut cheddar shreds straight from the bag. Taking a bite out of an irresistibly bold block of extra sharp cheddar cheese. We know you want to get back to streaming, but wasn't it nice to daydream about cheese for a bit? Tillamook Cheddar. Extraordinary dairy.
Este episodio es presentado por Hill's Pet Nutrition. Cada mascota en adopción merece una segunda oportunidad y tú lo haces posible cada día, porque cuando le das Hill's a tu mascota, alimentas a una mascota en adopción, lo que las hace más sanas, felices y más aptas a ser adoptadas, cambiando sus vidas para siempre para que puedan cambiar la tuya. Más de 14 millones de mascotas en refugios alimentadas y adoptadas. Es gracias a la ciencia. Conoce más en hillspet.com/podcast.
Welcome back. You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're talking about pranks, fooling, jokes, and fart noises. Well, actually, we talked about fart noises. We don't have any more fart noises.
Well, there might be.
We don't know yet.
I started doing some research on April Fool's Day, and it took me down a really weird rabbit hole that I want to share with you guys first. It's a little bit of a digression, but it's...
I have no idea how April Fool's came to be.
So it is relevant to this discussion. Now, we get things wrong on this show sometimes, but I'm pretty sure I'm correct about this next fact that I'm going to say right now.
Okay.
There were no trivia podcasts in 1708.
Not a one.
Actually...
However, there was a publication in Britain called The British Apollo, or Curious Amusements for the Ingenious, which sounded like a nice, we can maybe borrow their tagline because they've been out of print for the last few centuries. and so basically, one of the things that they would do in this publication, The British Apollo, people would be able to write in questions to them, to the editors, and they would answer your questions. Like, you know, if you're wondering about things about the world, and like, they'll tell you. And so question that was asked is, whence proceeds the custom of making April Fools?
So this was
a 1708 issue of this publication.
So that already exists, April Fools.
It already existed, and there were already people asking, like, it was so long before that there were already people going, why do we do this? What is the deal? You know, 1708, what is the deal with, you know, making all these jokes on April 1? As it turns out, even now, the custom is so old that you will not find a good answer. What you will hear a lot from people is this idea that in France, they had the calendar, and their calendar started on April 1st, and then when they decreed that the year was going to start on January 1st, like, that would be the beginning of a year. Everybody,
like the people who still honored April.
Exactly.
The
people
fools.
Who were, like, on the old calendar were the April Fools.
That was the story I always heard as a kid.
Yeah.
That sounds so mean. What's the point of making fun of
people
that?
People were mean back then.
There's lots of things casting doubt on that, because the switchover, and, well, first of all, a lot of the switchovers in calendars were, it was not so abrupt. You know, it took like a century for people to totally switch over to the calendar. So, that's probably not it. However, so the Museum of Hoaxes, which has a extensive body of research on April Fool's Day, talks about the Flemish writer Edouard de Denay, or Edouard de Dane. He apparently published a poem in 1561 about a guy who sends one of his servants out on a bunch of wild goose chases, and the servant finally realizes, like, oh, whoops, it's April 1st. He's fooling me.
Mm.
So 1561, that is the first written reference, and it is totally like April 1st, you play practical jokes on people.
On your servants and make them do extra class. Work.
Yep. So this is old, old, old. A lot of people point out that there is the Roman festival of Hilaria, which had taken place around the spring equinox. Mm-hmm. And you actually see kind of all around the world where winter turns to spring, you see festivals of renewal. Like, we're not dead.
Right,
you know,
right.
Let's just party. One of the things that they point out about the Roman festival is that, like, only on this day was everybody allowed to just go out and just like play games and play tricks on people or dress up like someone above your station. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing.
Sounds like a horror movie.
Suspension of like some of the social niceties and rules.
Yeah. And people had referred to it as like temporarily suspending the social order by way of pointing out that there is a social order.
Right.
You know, the exception proving the rule. Like, this is the day where you get to go out and do everything, and the other 364 days of the year,
you keep your mouth shut, know
your place. Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, there's a thought that, like, that's too close to April 1st. There must be a connection, you know, of all that stuff. But what I remember from high school is taking French class and learning about April Fools in France, Italy, Belgium. They say Poisson d'Avril, or April Fish.
Mm.
And they cut out a fish, a paper fish, and you try to slap it onto your friend's back.
You've been poisson.
Yep, you just got poissoned. Having basically run into that wall at my Where Did April Fools Come From research, I have brought to you now some of the funniest, or I think that they're the funniest, some of the best big-time April Fools pranks that have ever been pulled.
Okay.
And this was, Museum of Hoaxes lists this as number one. I totally agree. In 1957, the venerated British television news show, still in the days of black and white TV in, you know, the UK, the news show called Panorama. Total down the middle, straightforward news show. You know, the anchor was incredibly famous in Britain and everybody totally trusted this guy. They did a report on April 1st about Swedish spaghetti farmers and how basically they have all this footage of like Swedish people in traditional dress, like pulling spaghetti off of spaghetti trees and just talking about how like this year had a bumper harvest because the spaghetti weevil has not been seen in as great numbers. And there's nothing like fresh homegrown spaghetti, say the Swedes. Now, and it's just the best part is just like, of course, this is more of a family run operation. All of you will, of course, remember seeing footage of the vast spaghetti plantations in Italy. Now, the thing is, at this point, people in the UK ate spaghetti. It was an exotic foreign food. There were fights between husbands and wives over the wife saying that it was made with flour and water, and the husband saying, no, it grows on trees. I saw it on TV. They wouldn't lie to me. And just tons of people fell for it.
Wait, why Sweden, though?
It's far away as well.
Yeah, right, right. Okay. It's far enough away you can't go fact check it by looking outside. Yep. Some of the other better ones.
People really believe this.
People believed it. Yeah.
It was on TV.
Eventually they had to pull back and just were like, oh, okay, we were joking. But like, you know,
people would ask, where can I get a spaghetti tree? I want to grow spaghetti.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, just get a can of tomato sauce and put a spaghetti stick in there and I'll grow for the best. Yep, yeah.
Well, in 1996, Taco Bell took out a full-page newspaper ad in 6 major papers saying that they had purchased the Liberty Bell. And we're renaming it the Taco Liberty Bell.
Yeah. People got so upset.
In an effort to help pay down the national debt, we have purchased the Liberty Bell. And we're renaming it the Taco Liberty Bell. Yeah. And people were so angry. How dare you?
Well, because they do it to stadiums.
It is completely believable. And it is believable that a corporation like Taco Bell would do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they're almost poking fun at themselves in the golden age of sponsorships and name sponsorships.
Nothing is sacred anymore.
Yep. 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 In 1998, Burger King took out a full-page ad in USA Today to announce the left-handed Whopper.
What did it look like?
Well, it's like a Whopper. That was a Whopper with it said it's a Whopper with all the condiments rotated 180 degrees.
That's good.
And they got a lot of responses. People coming in asking for, you know, the left-handed Whoppers. They were left-handed.
Were you guys big pranksters growing up? Because I was.
I tried to be. No one ever opened my can of snakes. Yeah. Like, that's great, Colin.
Like senior pranks? Uh-oh. Did you guys do any of that stuff?
I don't think so.
No.
I'm trying to think of any of
our I
needed lots of attention.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Let me tell you guys some of my tricks. One of my favorite tricks is did this to my roommates in college. You unscrew the head of a shower, and then you take crushed up candies like Lifesavers or Jolly Ranchers. The best is the clear ones. Like if you find clear hard candy.
Oh, okay.
Crush it up and you put it back on the shower head. Okay. And then you wait for someone to take a shower. The hot water will go through the shower head, melt the candy.
Yeah.
And they're taking a shower and they become sticky.
It's like hot sugar and sugar water.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I have a question for you guys. Have you ever heard of Amazon's Mechanical Turk?
Yeah.
You've heard of that service where you can basically pay people a really small amount of money to do kind of tedious thing for you. Like you want to look through pictures for something and you're like, hey, I'll pay somebody 2 cents for an hour's worth of work.
Wait, is this real? Are you
guys pulling
that? Yeah, it is. Okay. It's totally like outsourcing work that you need to the internet, right. to the world.
To transcribe this.
And it's Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
And so when I first heard of it, I was like, Mechanical Turk? Like, people from Turkey? Like, why? That's weird. Like, what?
T-U-R-K?
Yeah, it is. It is that.
Seems a little
racist?
Yeah, offensive. Yeah.
Okay, so it's based on a hoax that happened, right, where there was a Mechanical Turk. It was this robot that looked roughly like a Turkish person as seen through the eyes of a European person in the 1770.
Right. Yes, yes.
Wearing a turban, and he was a chess master robot. He'd sit at this big cabinet with a chess table on top, and people could challenge the robot to chess matches, and it would beat them. And it could also do like really elaborate chess tricks on the chessboard that only experts would know how to do.
Who made it?
There was an inventor who debuted it in 1770 for the Empress of Austria. People were not baffled how it was made. They were like, it's a robot that plays chess. It's this ingenious
marvel of the modern age.
Marvel. And it was a hoax. It did turn out to be a hoax. But it took like over 80 years before the secret came out. It toured all around Europe and the Americas. People like Napoleon Bonaparte and Benjamin Franklin played against it and lost. So here's the here's the spoiler. Here's the secret of the Mechanical Turk. There would be a chess master inside of it playing.
You've got a little chess master in that box.
That's right. Probably more than six world-class chess masters.
That would
You had a team of chess masters?
You would take it on tour. And so it would be like, just they did all sorts of variations. Depending on who the master was and how good they were, they would do different sets of the rules. Like, oh, they'll play with one fewer piece. That's how good they were, that they could beat you. So they beat most people. Maybe a few people beat the Mechanical Turk.
But even so,
but it was just very impressive.
It wasn't the fact that it was good at chess. It was the fact that it was actually a robot could play chess at all. It was still impressive.
There was a little voice box inside of it that would say, like, the robotic
checkmate.
But in French.
Oh. Checkmate.
Yeah.
Checkmate, but in French.
I just thought it was amazing that they were able to pull this off for over 80 years.
Yeah.
People would interact with it and not, and also it's like, you guys, do you have anything else in your world that has this level of intelligence? And if you tried to trick it and move a piece incorrectly, it would like move your piece back. It would dock you and then take a turn because it's a chess master. It's like, you know, whatever. But they were like, what? I tried to trick it and they had like magnets all around
it. Playing against a person. So that term is now a common phrase, Mechanical Turk.
Well,
depends
Amazon
on who you talk to, right?
Right.
Okay. Techie people, it comes up.
It's a false automaton. You can look up more false automatons. There have been other examples.
There were various people who wanted to buy it and would offer like huge sums of money for it. Emperors or kings would ask for it. He told one of the emperors the secret, and then apparently the emperor was really sad after.
Poor emperor.
But they didn't tell anybody.
Old-timey hoaxes are weird. Remember I read about this old-timey hoax where, like, a woman stuffed dead rabbits
and told the world that she gave birth to rabbits.
Bunch of other kind of weird stuff. I don't know what the goal is. I mean, to be famous? I don't know.
To be famous.
They made a lot of money touring around with this thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
But not the lady who gave birth to rabbits.
Oh.
She has to have a constant supply of rabbits.
She might have been a little unstable, I think.
You might be right.
Yeah.
There's some people who need a lot of attention.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
And we got one last quiz segment. Colin, what you got?
So, celebrity death hoaxes. they're not new. You know, we've talked on the show before about, like, Paul is dead. You know, the theory that Paul McCartney was secretly replaced by a double in the 1960s, which was not true, by the way. But those predate the internet. I think these days, Facebook and Twitter just have really brought new life to the speed with which a celebrity death hoax can just
spread.
Take over. Right. Everyone's heard about it. So I put together a quiz for you guys about some very notable celebrity death hoaxes over the last few years. So get your buzzers ready. Okay. And when I'm done reading, buzz on in. In March of 2012, fake news reports attributed to CNN and Fox News claimed this diva had been killed in either a plane crash or a car accident, depending on which fake report you happen to see on Facebook.
When?
2012.
Oh, I was going to say Gloria Estefan, but I was like,
I'll give you a little hint. She was, at the time, she was in the middle of promotional tours for her new album, Love Me Back to Life.
What?
This was Celine Dion.
Huh.
Yes.
Missed that one.
And it turns out that these Facebook posts all went back to basically some malicious, it was malicious software. And it was like harvesting users' info. And the idea was get you to click on the Facebook post and then it could weasel its way in and extract your information.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
In June of 2009, the fake news site Global Associated News reported that this Academy Award-winning actress had fallen to her death off a cliff in New Zealand.
Oh.
Zealand.
I do kind of remember that.
Anna Paquin?
No, not Anna Paquin. This was in 2009. She won her Academy Award in 2010. This was Natalie Portman. And just the week prior, the same false news report had been put out about Jeff Goldblum, that he had fallen to his death off a cliff.
In New Zealand.
In New Zealand.
I was like, somebody fell in New Zealand, but was it a woman?
Yeah.
I thought it was a man. Anyway.
It was like it didn't take the first time with Jeff Goldblum, but we'll try it again. In May 2013, according to false reports on Facebook, this rapper had been nearly stabbed to death in New York City. There was a hit movie based on this rapper's life. Dana.
Is this 50 Cent?
No, no. Oh. Chris.
Is it M&M?
It is M&M.
Oh. What did you say?
M&M.
M&M. these fake posts were even accompanied by these really gruesome pictures of someone who had been stabbed. The photos were real. It was not M&M. He was not stabbed. He didn't die. His representative had to issue a report saying that he, quote, remains unstabbed.
Unstabbed.
So far.
I feel like this is a statement on our friends, you know, on our like social media friends, because I don't see it on there. Yeah, I haven't heard of any of.
See, a lot of these though will make the jump off of Facebook or Twitter into news, like real legitimate news sources will sometimes pick these stories up in the rush to have it first, and then they'll have to issue retractions later.
Dangerous game.
It is. Yeah. In June 2007, false reports circulated online that this celebrity had died after being shanked in a Los Angeles jail where she was serving 45 days for a probation violation. Dana and Chris.
Martha Stewart.
Paris Hilton?
It was Paris Hilton. Right. Yes, Paris Hilton. The reports. And again, the reports got so much traction that a representative for the jail had to come out and say, no, Miss Hilton has not been shanked. She is fine. She's still in her
remains
still in jail.
Unshanked.
Last one. In April 2013, some misunderstood Twitter hashtags related to the death of Margaret Thatcher apparently led to rumors that this singer and actress had died.
Oh. Yeah, it was like...
The hashtag was, now Thatcher's dead.
Yeah.
Chris.
Now that Cher's dead.
Yes.
You're right.
People are like, oh, Cher died? Now that Cher's dead?
That is unfortunate.
That is really unfortunate.
Wait, what was the hashtag again?
Now Thatcher's dead.
Mm.
Which also reads, now that Cher's dead. Yes. All of these people were not, in fact, dead.
At the time.
Yes, right. Yes. Take everything you see online with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that is our show. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening. I hope you learned a lot of stuff about novelty items.
Farts.
Mechanical Turks. And you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And thanks to our sponsor, Squarespace. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that, because you're already listening to a podcast.